This video presentation reviews the life of Imam Jawad alayhi salam and provides an overview of his social, scientific, and political achievements. This presentation also highlights the unique aspect of the imamate of Imam Jawad, which was his imamate at a very young age. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali alayhi salam, also known as Jawad or Taqi, was born on the 15th of Ramadan in the year 195 Hijri in Medina. He was given the title of Abu Ja'far by his father Imam Radha alayhi salam, which was originally the title of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. To distinguish him from Imam Baqir, he would also be called Abu Ja'far al-Thani, or the second Abu Ja'far. He was the only child of Imam Radha. His mother was Lady Sabike, who was a slave girl before marrying Imam Radha. Similar to Najmi Khatun, the mother of Imam Radha, Lady Sabike was also originally from an area in Africa that is currently between Egypt and Sudan. She belonged to the same tribe as Maria al-Qibtiyya, the Prophet's wife, and the mother of Ibrahim, who passed away in early childhood during the life of the Prophet. To remove bad memories from her period in captivity, Imam Radha also called her with the name of Khayzuran. She was unique in piety among the other women of her time. She had such a great status that years earlier, before Imam Kazim's imprisonment, he had asked someone to pass his greetings to her. Imam Jawad was born when his father Imam Radha was 46 years old and 12 years had passed from the start of his imamate. During these 12 years, many doubted if Imam Radha was the true imam of the time, as he did not have a son to inherit the imamate after him. Among the skeptics were the Waqifi Shi'as, who did not believe in the imamate of Imam Radha and were looking for any excuse to challenge his imamate. Imam Radha was patient about the accusations against him. He would confidently respond with a prophecy that God will certainly bless me with a son who will inherit the imamate after me. Even after Imam Radha's prophecy became a reality and Imam Jawad was born, the blames against him did not stop. Some doubted and spread rumors that Imam Jawad was not really Imam Radha's son. This was to the extent that even some of the Imam's close relatives were influenced by the rumors. They came to the Imam and questioned the darker complexion of Imam Jawad, which was rare in the family. They asked the Imam to allow them to bring some experts who could confirm that Imam Radha was the biological father of Imam Jawad by matching their faces and body gestures. Due to their insistence, the Imam finally agreed. The experts came and verified that Imam Radha was indeed Imam Jawad's biological father. The birth of Imam Jawad brought extreme joy to Imam Radha and his family. This was not only because Imam Radha had become a father at an old age, but also because it verified his imamate. The Shia community gained trust and confidence in their belief in the imamate of Imam Radha, as he now had a son to inherit the imamate. Imam Radha described Imam Jawad as a newborn who was more auspicious and blessed for the Shias than any other newborns. The Imam would stand by Imam Jawad's cradle and would speak to him in private for a long time. When Imam Radha was asked about their conversation, he responded that he was benefiting his son from his knowledge. Imam Radha had frequently introduced Imam Jawad as his successor in the imamate to his companions and representatives despite Imam Jawad's very young age. Once one of Imam Radha's companions asked him about whom he should refer to after him. Imam Radha introduced Imam Jawad as his successor. The companion reacted by surprise at Imam Jawad's very young age, who was just 3 years old. Imam Radha responded that age is not a limitation for the imamate.
Imam Raza then continued with the example of Prophet Jesus from the Quran, who began his prophethood as a newborn. Imam Raza had a special honor and respect for his only child, Imam Jawad. He would always call Imam Jawad by his title of Abu Ja'far instead of his original name Muhammad, which shows respect in the Arab culture. Also, when Imam Raza traveled to Marv, he would address Imam Jawad with his title of Abu Ja'far in his letters. Imam Jawad was also very attached to his beloved father. Before Imam Raza was taken to Marv, he had brought Imam Jawad to Mecca for pilgrimage. The Imam, at such a young age, had realized that his father was performing his farewell prayers around the Kaaba as if it were his last visit. Imam Jawad then became extremely sad and did not move from his place until Imam Raza asked him to do so. After multiple battles that took place over a course of more than 2 years, Ma'mun was finally able to defeat and kill his brother Amin. With Amin's death, Ma'mun officially became the only Abbasid caliph. Instead of relocating to the Abbasid capital of Baghdad, Ma'mun decided to stay in Marv, present-day Mari in Turkmenistan, and made it the capital of his government. However, his government was unstable and various uprisals and riots were threatening his power. The main threat to his government was led by the Alawids, who viewed the Abbasids as an illegitimate government since their very beginning. The term Alawids refers to the children of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which also includes the Prophet's descendants from his daughter Lady Fatima salamullahi alayha. The Alawid uprisals were initiated in Kufa by one of the descendants of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, known as Ibn Taba' al-Taba'. The uprisal in Kufa was quickly spread to other cities including Mecca, Medina, Yemen, Basra, Mada'in, and Ahwaz, and became a serious threat for Ma'mun's newly established government. After around 10 challenging months, Ma'mun was finally able to defeat these widespread uprisals. Although Ma'mun was finally able to defeat the widespread Alawid uprisals, he could not put an end to the long years of conflict between the Alawids and the Abbasids. Thus, Ma'mun, who is known as the most strategic caliph among the other Abbasid caliphs, decided to find an innovative solution to deal with the potential threat of the Alawids. He decided to associate the Alawids to his government. He chose Imam Raza for his plot, who was the most well-known character among the Alawids. Imam Raza was famous for his divine knowledge among the Muslims due to years of his scientific activities and contributions in Medina. Imam Raza was also the spiritual leader and the Imam for the Shia Muslims. To implement his plot, Ma'mun sent invitations and insisted that the Imam travel to Marv and meet him. The Imam rejected Ma'mun's invitations every time, but could not change his decision. Finally, Ma'mun sent military delegates to Medina to bring the Imam to Marv. Imam Raza realized that Ma'mun would not give up his decision and was finally forced to travel to Marv along with Ma'mun's delegates. Before leaving Medina, Imam Raza held the hand of his beloved 5-year-old son Imam Jawad and visited the tomb of the Holy Prophet, seeking the Prophet's protection for his son. Imam Raza then asked his companions and representatives to obey Imam Jawad and introduced him as his successor in the imamate. After Imam Radha was brought to Marv, Ma'mun finally informed the Imam about his real intentions. Over a course of about 2 months, there were multiple discussions between Ma'mun and the Imam regarding the Imam's role in the government. The Imam rejected Ma'mun's offer every time. Eventually, Ma'mun lost his patience and threatened to kill the Imam. It was then that the Imam accepted Ma'mun's offer as a crown prince with certain conditions. The Imam emphasized that his role would only be to observe the governmental affairs from a distance and to strictly serve as a consultant. With these conditions, Imam Radha prohibited Ma'mun from using the Imam's name or his influence on the hearts of the people in any of his governmental decisions. One of Ma'mun's plots in bringing Imam Radha to Marv was to isolate him from the people and his Shia followers. Thus, Ma'mun put the Imam's life under intense surveillance. After a year from the Imam's arrival in Marv, Ma'mun proposed his daughter Umm Habib to Imam Radha and insisted that the Imam marry her. By this marriage, Ma'mun was able to monitor all aspects of the Imam's private life. Furthermore, Ma'mun knew that Imam Radha already had a son and decided to promise his other daughter Umm Fadl to Imam Jawad while both Imam Jawad and Umm Fadl were very young. He made this decision in the absence of Imam Jawad while he had never even met him. When Imam Radha was in Marv, he missed his beloved son and communicated with him by letter. In one letter, Imam Radha advised Imam Jawad to use the main entrance of his house despite the opinion of his caretakers. They wanted Imam Jawad to use the other door of the house to avoid any contact between him and the needy who would wait for him at the main entrance of his house in the hopes of receiving charity. In the letter, Imam Radha also specified a minimum amount of charity for Imam Jawad to give to the needy. With this advice, Imam Radha wanted the title of Jawad, which means generous, to shine in his son's character. Thus, Imam Jawad was well known for his generosity even before his imamate. As time passed, Ma'mun realized that his plots against Imam Radha were ineffective. Also, the situation in Baghdad, the capital of the Abbasids, was unstable and out of control. The Abbasid royal family was outraged by Ma'mun's decision to appoint Imam Radha as his crown prince. They could not tolerate seeing the Abbasid government fall to the Alawid lineage in the future. They selected Ibrahim ibn Mahdi, one of their family members, as their chosen caliph, and they all paid allegiance to him. Therefore, Ma'mun decided to personally move to Baghdad to manage the instability in the city. He knew that the Abbasids would never approve Imam Radha as his crown prince. Ma'mun believed that the Abbasids would still accept him as their caliph if he could eliminate their excuse by killing Imam Radha. Ma'mun wanted to prepare a favorable environment in Baghdad ahead of his arrival and thus decided to eliminate Imam Radha as soon as possible. On their way towards Baghdad, Ma'mun and his army stopped by his father Harun's tomb, which was in a garden near the city of Tuz in Khurasan. At this place, Ma'mun called the Imam to his presence and poisoned him. Thus, Imam Radha became the only Shia Imam who was directly poisoned by the hand of a Muslim caliph. He was martyred after being Ma'mun's crown prince for just about a year and a half. When Imam Radha was on his deathbed, Ma'mun came to visit him. He told the Imam that, "I don't know which tragedy is harder for me, losing you or the people's accusation that blame me for your condition." The Imam ignored Ma'mun's words. He just opened his eyes and told Ma'mun to treat his son Imam Jawad well. The Imam warned him with the prophecy that both of them will die in a short period from each other. During the last hours of Imam Rada's life, his companion Abu Salt Harawi saw a young boy inside the Imam's residence. He came to the boy and asked him how he had entered the house, as he had closed all of the entrances since Imam Rada was sick and could not meet anyone. The boy responded that the Almighty who had brought me from Medina to Tus in just a moment entered me into the house through the closed door. Abu Salt asked him who he was, and the boy responded that I am your Imam, Muhammad ibn Ali. He said that I am here to meet and bid farewell to my lonely and poisoned father. When Imam Rada saw his 7.5-year-old son, he got up and hugged him. They talked in private for a while until the Imam's soul ascended. Imam Jawad then performed his father's rituals individually. He washed and prayed on the Imam's body and then disappeared without anyone else noticing his presence. After the martyrdom of Imam Rada, Imam Jawad publicly declared his imamat in Medina. He came to the mosque of the Prophet, stepped on the Prophet's pulpit, and addressed the people. He introduced himself and told the people that he is the one with the divine knowledge. In the beginning of the imamat of Imam Jawad, there was a great confusion among the Shias about his eligibility for the imamat. Undoubtedly, Imam Rada had only one child to inherit the imamat from him. However, it was very hard for some Shias to accept the imamat of a 7.5-year-old boy who was even much younger than the Islamic puberty age of 15. This confusion caused some divisions among the Shia community. Some referred to the Waqifis or Zaydis, and some others sought their imam among the brothers of Imam Rada. Furthermore, those who were against the Shia theology found a great opportunity to mock the Shia belief in the imamate of a young boy. The confusion in recognizing the Imam of the time was not limited to the ordinary Shia followers, but also included some of the Shia elders, who doubted the imamate of Imam Jawad. When the news of the martyrdom of Imam Rada reached Baghdad, the Shia elders and scholars held a meeting in their house to discuss the next Imam. In this meeting, one of the elders suggested to take care of Imam Jawad until he grew up and could take the leadership of the Shia community. His suggestion received a strong reaction by another elder, who responded that if the imamate is granted by God to even a one-day child, his knowledge is superior than an old scholar, and if it is not granted by God, then even a 1,000-year-old person would have the same knowledge as an ordinary person. This latter opinion was approved by the other Shia elders. However, they decided to visit Medina and personally investigate about the true imam of the time. After a few months, the Hajj season arrived and the Shias, particularly about 80 of their elders and scholars, stopped by Medina during their travel to perform Hajj. In their gathering in Medina, Abdullah, one of the brothers of Imam Rada, was present. A person from the audience told everyone to ask him questions as their imam. Some of the scholars, however, challenged his imamate. They told the others that we have received narrations from Imam Baqir alayhi salam and Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that it is impossible for two brothers to become an imam except in the case of Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhim salam. Ever since the time of Imam Baqir, the Shias knew that the imam of the time must have divine knowledge and they could verify his imamat with their questions. Hence, they decided to verify Abdullah's knowledge by asking him some questions. However, he was not able to respond. His answers caused a great disappointment to the audience, and they decided to leave the meeting. They told each other that I wish Imam Rida's son was older so that we were needless of someone like Abdullah. At this point, Imam Jawad entered the gathering. He addressed his uncle Abdullah and warned him about how hard his situation would be in the hereafter in front of God. Imam Jawad told him that God will question him about his ruling or fatwa to something that he didn't have knowledge about, while someone more knowledgeable than him was present among the Muslims. The audience then repeated their questions, and Imam Jawad provided them with the correct and convincing answers according to the teachings of the Prophet and the previous Imams. The Imam's answers made the audience happy and satisfied. During their stay in Medina, the Shi'as asked many questions from Imam Jawad. The number of questions they asked was estimated to be in the thousands. For many of them, the Imam provided short answers or responded in advance even before the question had completed. This in itself was a miracle and validated the fact that the Imam held the knowledge of the unseen. Once the Shias verified the divine knowledge of Imam Jawad, they began to have faith in his imamate. They did not have any doubt that the Imam's knowledge was given to him directly by God, and the Imam could not have obtained his knowledge through education due to his very young age. Thus, many Shias who had been attracted to the other sects such as Waqifis also returned to accept the imamate of Imam Jawad. Thus, the majority of the Shia followers of Imam Rida also followed Imam Jawad as their next Imam. However, out of curiosity, they frequently questioned Imam Jawad about his imamate at such a young age. The Imam would respond in various ways. Once the Imam told them about the story of Prophet Solomon when his father, Prophet David, appointed him as his successor while he was just a young boy. The elders and the scholars of the Israelites initially rejected this decision, but God provided them with a miracle to prove his selection for them. On another occasion, the Imam told them that God has repeated in the imamate what he had chosen for the prophethood in the past. The Imam then reminded them about the prophethood of Prophet John at a young age by referring to the following verse of the Quran. We granted him, John, wisdom while yet a child. Prophet Jesus is another example who announced his prophethood as a newborn, as mentioned in the following verse of the Quran.
قال إني عبد الله آتاني الكتاب وجعلني نبيا.
He, Jesus, said, Verily, I am God's servant. He has granted me the book and has made me a prophet. On another occasion, the Imam clarified for them that the invitation to God is not dependent on the age of the inviter. He referred to the following verse of the Quran.
قُلْ هَذِهِ سَبِيلِي أَدْعُو إِلَى اللَّهِ عَلَى بَصِيرَةٍ أَنَا وَمَنِ اتَّبَعَنِي
Say, this is my way. I invite to God based on clear knowledge. I and whoever follows me. The Imam then reminded them about Imam Ali as the first male who followed Prophet Muhammad in his invitation to God while he was just 9 years old.
After the martyrdom of Imam Rida, Ma'mun and his troops returned to the Abbasid capital of Baghdad and were able to bring the city under their control. Ma'mun also changed the color of his outfit from green to black, which represented the Abbasids. With this decision, Ma'mun wanted the Abbasids' trust and loyalty and wanted to assure them that the caliphate would stay in their family.
Previously, when Ma'mun had selected Imam Raza as his crown prince, he had asked his governmental officials to wear green outfits to get the Alawid's support. Although Ma'mun had concealed his direct role in Imam Raza's poisoning and martyrdom, he was held responsible by the public as soon as the Imam was poisoned. When the Imam was in his deathbed, Ma'mun came to visit him. He told the Imam that, "I don't know which tragedy is harder for me, losing you or the people's accusation that blame me for your condition." To portray his innocence, Ma'mun showed great sorrow and grief immediately after Imam Raza's martyrdom and during his burial. However, it became apparent for the people, especially for the Shi'as, that Ma'mun was in fact the one who had martyred the Imam. Ma'mun had brought Imam Raza to Marv and had appointed him as his crown prince to peacefully remove the threat of the Alawid uprisals for his government. He was now afraid that his role in the martyrdom of Imam Raza might trigger the Alawids to initiate their military activities against him. Thus, he decided to find a peaceful solution for this problem. He wanted to portray to the public that he still held a good relationship with the Alawids as before. Thus, about a year after the martyrdom of Imam Raza, Ma'mun decided to pursue his initial plan of marrying his daughter Umm Fadl to Imam Jawad. He had promised his daughter Umm Fadl to Imam Jawad around 2 years earlier in Marv in Imam Jawad's absence. By this time, the Shi'as had verified the divine knowledge of Imam Jawad and had accepted his imamate. Thus, Ma'mun knew that Imam Jawad had the same status in the eyes of the Shi'as as his father Imam Raza. The elevated status of Imam Raza had led Ma'mun to select the Imam as his crown prince. This political marriage was a peaceful sign to portray to the people that the two families of the Alawis and the Abbasids were united and had a strong relationship together. Ma'mun had thought that this marriage could have multiple other benefits for him as well. He could closely monitor the Imam's activities, especially his communications with the Shia leaders and representatives. Also, the young Imam would be affiliated to the Abbasid royal family, and he would be prone to the sinful behavior that they would indulge in. In such a situation, the Imam's holy character would be damaged in the eyes of the Muslims, particularly his Shia followers. To implement his decision, Ma'mun sent a letter to Imam Jawad in Medina and invited him to Baghdad. Prior to his meeting with Ma'mun, the Imam coincidentally encountered Ma'mun in the streets of Baghdad while he was going for hunting with his troops. The people in the streets ran away in the fear of Ma'mun's troops. However, Imam Jawad, as young as he was, remained in the street and was not afraid of Ma'mun's troops. The Imam's calmness attracted Ma'mun's attention. He came to the Imam and asked him why he did not run away like the others. The Imam responded, "O Caliph, the road is not narrow which would require me to open it up for you. I have also not committed any guilt or mistake to run away from you, and I don't think that you would prosecute anyone without a guilt." Ma'mun was shocked by the Imam's confidence and wise response and asked for his name. The Imam introduced himself, and this was the first time that Ma'mun met the Imam. After a short conversation, Ma'mun left for hunting, and on his way back to the palace, he met the Imam again. He asked the Imam if he knew about what he had hunted today. The Imam then informed Ma'mun about his special hunt and proved to him that he held the divine knowledge like his father Imam Raza. Ma'mun then brought the Imam to the palace with respect. Now, he was even more determined to pursue his plan to marry his daughter Umm Fadl to the Imam. The Abbasid royal family became worried when they heard about Ma'mun's decision to marry his daughter to Imam Jawad. They feared that Ma'mun would eventually choose Imam Jawad as his crown prince, similar to choosing his father Imam Rida in the past. They did not want to lose their power and influence in the future government. They came to Ma'mun to show their objection and tried to convince him to revert his decision. In their discussion, they told Ma'mun that Imam Jawad was still a child and lacked the knowledge and maturity for marriage. They asked Ma'mun to wait at least until Imam Jawad grew up and learned the Islamic teachings. Ma'mun responded that Imam Jawad belongs to a family whose knowledge is given by God. Ma'mun knew this as he had tested Imam Rida's knowledge in Marv by setting up multiple debates between him and the top scholars of the time. He had also witnessed Imam Jawad's divine knowledge when he had met him for the first time on the streets of Baghdad. However, he allowed the Abbasids to set up a scientific debate to test Imam Jawad's knowledge and verify his claim. The Abbasid royal family accepted Ma'mun's challenge and asked Yahya bin Ekthem, the chief justice of Baghdad, to debate with Imam Jawad. They promised him a great reward if he could overcome Imam Jawad in the debate. Ma'mun held a big event in which the people and the top scholars and officials attended. In this event, Yahya asked for Ma'mun's permission to begin the debate. He then asked the Imam about the Islamic ruling for someone who has hunted while he is in the state of ihram or in the Hajj garment. The Imam responded by asking him to specify the conditions under which the hunting had taken place, as this influenced the ruling. The Imam asked him if the hunting had happened intentionally or by mistake, whether the person knew the relevant Islamic law or not, whether the location of hunting was inside the holy site or not, whether the person was free or a slave, whether the hunting had happened at night or during the day, and whether the person was performing Hajj or Umrah. The Imam mentioned 11 different conditions which would influence the ruling. Yahya became greatly shocked by the young Imam's response and could not continue debating with the Imam, as he did not know that this single question could have various answers depending on the relevant conditions. Furthermore, the Imam's response demonstrated his full knowledge about all aspects of the Islamic law regarding this question. Ma'mun, having witnessed Yahya's inability to continue debating with the Imam, told the Abbasids that you have now realized what I had told you before about the Imam's knowledge. He then told the Imam that I have selected you as my son-in-law and asked the Imam to recite the Islamic marriage contract. The Imam accepted this political marriage as it was enforced by the Muslim Caliph, and his refusal could have negative consequences on himself and the Shia community. The Imam specified the mahriya or dower of Ummi Fadl equal to the amount of mahriya of his great-grandmother Lady Fatima salamu alayhi alayha in her marriage to Imam Ali alayhi salam. After reciting the marriage contract, Ma'mun held a ceremony and distributed gifts among the audience and feasted the people. At the end of the ceremony, the people dispersed and only the close officials of the government stayed in the palace. Ma'mun asked the Imam to provide the answer to the question raised by Yahya bin Ekthem regarding hunting. The Imam then explained the Islamic law about all various conditions under which the hunting might have occurred. He provided answers for each condition that he had presented to Yahya. The Imam's response resulted in Ma'mun's applause and admiration. Ma'mun then suggested to the Imam to ask Yahya bin Ekthem a question in return. The Imam asked Yahya how a man and a woman could Islamically be unlawful to each other early in the morning and then lawful before the noon, then become unlawful to each other at noon and then lawful in the afternoon, then become unlawful to each other at sunset and then lawful in the evening, then become unlawful at midnight and then lawful at dawn. Yahya swore by God that he did not know the answer and asked the Imam to shed light. The Imam then provided him with a comprehensive answer. Ma'mun then asked the Abbasid royal family if they could provide such a concise answer to either of the questions raised by the Imam or Yahya. They then accepted their limited knowledge and admitted that Ma'mun knew about the status of Imam Jawad better than them. Ma'mun then ended the meeting by highly praising the Imam. The Imam was the leader of the Shia community and used every opportunity to defend the principles of the Shia belief. During the Imam's brief stay in Baghdad, Yahya bin Akhtham, who was defeated in his previous debate with the Imam, tried to challenge him with a critical question about the Shia belief against the first and second caliphs. He asked the Imam's opinion about a fabricated narration, stating that the angel Gabriel came to the Prophet and told him that God says that he is pleased with the first caliph, and asked the Prophet to ask the first caliph if he is also pleased with God. The Imam responded that the Prophet told the Muslims in his last Hajj that many will affiliate lies to him after his death. The Prophet advised the Muslims to validate any narration affiliated to him with the Quran and his traditions. The Imam then told Yahya that this narration was not valid as it was against the Quran by referring to the following verse.
وَلَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ وَنَعْلَمُ مَا تُوَسْوِسُ بِهِ نَفْسُهُ وَنَحْنُ أَقْرَبُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ حَبْلِ الْوَرِيدِ.
Surely we have created man, and we know the promptings of his heart, and we are nearer to him than even his jugular vein. The Imam then said that how was it possible that God didn't know the first caliph's opinion about him and needed to ask the Prophet? Yahya did not give up and asked the Imam's opinion about another affiliated narration to the Prophet, which states that the first and second caliphs on the earth are like the angels Gabriel and Michael in the heaven. The Imam responded that the angels Gabriel and Michael were never infidels, nor ever disobeyed God by committing even a single sin. The Imam then challenged this unequal comparison and said that the first and second caliphs were infidels before converting to Islam and spent most of their lives in infidelity to God. Yahya then asked the Imam's opinion about another affiliated narration to the Prophet, which stated that the first and second caliphs are the leaders of the elderlies in paradise. The Imam responded that all of the people in paradise will be young and no elderly will be found. The Imam then said that this narration was fabricated by the Umayyads to downgrade the Prophet's narration that Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein are the leaders of the youth in paradise. Yahya continued and stated another fabricated narration where the Prophet had said that if I was not selected for the prophethood, indeed the second caliph would have been selected instead. The Imam rejected this false narration by referring to the following verse of the Quran.
وَإِذْ أَخَذْنَا مِنَ النَّبِيِّينَ مِيثَاقَهُمْ وَمِنْكَ وَمِنْ نُوحٍ وَإِبْرَاهِيمَ وَمُوسَى وَعِيسَى بْنِ مَرْيَمَ وَأَخَذْنَا مِنْهُمْ مِيثَاقًا غَلِيظًا.
Recall, O Prophet, that we received a pledge from the prophets and from you and from Noah and Abraham and Moses and Jesus son of Mary. We received from them a solemn pledge. The Imam then said that God had taken a pledge from the prophets for their prophethood, so how could he change his covenant? He questioned Yahya that none of the prophets became infidel even for a single moment in their life, so how was it possible for God to select someone as his prophet who had spent the majority of his life in infidelity? Yahya continued and stated yet another fabricated narration where the Prophet had said that if God sends his punishment, no one would be spared other than the second caliph. The Imam rejected this narration by referring to the following verse of the Quran.
وما كان الله ليعذبهم وأنت فيهم وما كان الله معذبهم وهم يستغفرون.
But God would not punish them while you, the Prophet, are amongst them, and God would not punish them as long as they seek forgiveness. The Imam then denied the authenticity of this narration. This debate came to an end with the Imam achieving his goals without sparking any controversy on this sensitive subject. After a short stay in Baghdad and his marriage to Umm Fadl, the Imam returned to Medina alone. Imam Jawad and Umm Fadl were both too young to live with each other, and their marriage was only limited to the recitation of the Islamic marriage contract. The Imam was the only source of the true Islam, and his piety and divine character was observed by anyone who interacted with him. The Imam had multiple elevated titles such as Jawad, which means generous, and Taqi, which means pious. There are also some prayers and supplications narrated from the Imam. Among them is a special prayer recommended to be recited on the first day of the lunar month for guaranteeing health during the upcoming month. Also, there's a supplication specific for the month of Ramadan. Another well-known supplication narrated from the Imam is known as Hirz-e-Jawad, which is recommended to be carried by a person for protection. The Imam was the true source of divine knowledge in the society. He was referred by many to answer questions regarding various aspects of the Islamic sciences. The names of 193 individuals who had narrated hadith from the Imam is still available until today. The Imam had also trained multiple notable scholars. These scholars had a special role in recording and preserving the Imam's narrations. They were not only scholars in the Islamic knowledge, but were also unique in piety and character. Ali ibn Mahziyar was one of the Imam's notable companions who was also his representative in Ahwaz. He was a great scholar in the Islamic law. He had authored 33 books in various topics in Islamic law and belief. Multiple letters of communication between him and the Imam are recorded in history. These letters show his special status and respect in the eyes of Imam Jawad. The Imam frequently expressed his satisfaction and approval for Ali ibn Mahziyar and prayed for him. Fadl ibn Shazan was another great companion of Imam Jawad. He was a master in various Islamic literatures such as Islamic law and Ilmul Kalam, which is the study of Islamic doctrine that involves defending the Islamic principles against doubters. He had authored tens of books on various topics including defending the Shia belief and falsifying the claims of various sects and theologies. Abdul Azim al-Hassani was another notable companion of Imam Jawad, who was from the descendants of Imam Hassan. A few of the Imam's companions were also among the 18 companions of Ashab-e-Ijma, or the companions of the consensus, whose narrations are currently regarded in the seminaries with the highest level of trust. Safwan ibn Yahya was one of the companions of Ashab-e-Ijma, who had authored around 30 books, 11 of which have survived until today. He had narrated hundreds of ahadiths from the Shia Imams, including Imam Jawad. Ma'mun had realized that Imam Jawad belonged to a family that was blessed with the divine knowledge. He had tested Imam Radha's knowledge in Marv by holding multiple debate sessions between him and the top Islamic and non-Islamic scholars of the time. Ma'mun had realized that he could not defeat Imam Radha in any scientific debate. Instead, The news of the Imam's victory in the debates had spread across the Islamic territory and had led to even more popularity and respect for the Imam. Maimun also verified Imam Jawad's knowledge in his first meeting with him on the streets of Baghdad. He later witnessed the Imam's knowledge in responding to the questions raised by Yahya bin Aktham, the Chief Justice of Baghdad. Thus, Maimun did not attempt to challenge Imam Jawad's knowledge in public debates, unlike what he did to Imam Raza in the past. He instead had to find a way to distract the Muslims from being attracted to the Imam and his divine knowledge. He had established a good relationship with the neighboring countries as a policy to overcome the internal problems in his government, such as the war with Amin and the Alawite uprisals. Thus, he ordered for excessive translation of foreign literatures such as Greek philosophy into Arabic. He then spread the translations among the Muslims in the hopes of distracting them from being attracted to the Imam's knowledge. Although Imam Jawad was the son-in-law of the Caliph, he was completely indifferent to this material world. After reciting the marriage contract to Ummi Fadl, the Imam did not stay long in Baghdad and returned to Medina alone. He continued his role in Medina as the divine Shia leader. While in Medina and before his official wedding ceremony to Ummi Fadl in Iraq, the Imam married a slave girl named Samane. The Imam's marriage to a slave girl was a practical lesson about the equality of the people in the eyes of the Imam, as he regarded the Caliph's daughter and a slave girl the same. It was also a clear message that his marriage to Umm Fadl was in fact a political marriage due to the circumstances that the Imam was living in. After around 11 years from the time of the marriage contract to Ummi Fadl, the Imam was brought to Baghdad for his official wedding ceremony. At this time, Imam Jawad's oldest son, Imam Hadi, had been born from his wife Samane in Medina and was 2 years old. Prior to the Imam's arrival in Baghdad, Maimun had already left Baghdad towards current-day Turkey to personally manage the instability in that region. The Imam was then taken towards Maimun. The Imam met Maimun at Tikrit, a city in northern Iraq, and his wedding ceremony to Ummi Fadl was officially held there. Maimun would always portray that he was proud of the Imam and treated him respectfully. However, on multiple occasions he attempted to force the Imam into sinful behavior that he and the other Abbasid royal family members would indulge in. His intention was to defame the Imam and his infallibility in the eyes of the Muslims. During the Imam's wedding ceremony, Maimun prepared beautiful slave girls with precious jewels in their hands and sent them towards the Imam to accompany him as he walked towards the stage. However, the Imam was completely indifferent to them. On another occasion, a singer told Maimun that he could influence the Imam's heart towards sin and fulfill Maimun's ill intentions. He approached the Imam and sat in front of him and started singing using his musical instrument. The people gathered around the singer to enjoy his performance. However, the Imam looked at the singer and loudly addressed him, "O the long-bearded one, fear God." At this time, his hand froze, the instrument fell, and he could not continue his performance. With this political marriage, the Imam became affiliated to the Abbasid royal family and was required to meet with them. Even with this affiliation, his lifestyle was quite simple and his interaction with the people was as usual. The Imam practically showed his detachment from this material world. Once one of the Imam's companions saw the Imam in the palace and thought to himself that the Imam would never want to leave the palace and return to Medina. At this time, the Imam addressed him and said, a simple meal made of bread and salt near the Prophet's tomb is more pleasant for me than what you see here in the palace. After the wedding, the Imam had a stay in Baghdad for several months until the upcoming Hajj season. He then left Baghdad with Umm Fadl towards Mecca to perform Hajj. After performing Hajj, they returned to Medina and stayed there for the rest of Ma'mun's government for about 2.5 years. To meet the needs of the growing Shia community, Imam Sadiq had established a networking organization of his trusted companions and his representatives in various cities around the Islamic territory. This organization was further developed during the imamate of Imam Kazim and Imam Raza and became an effective way of communication between the Shias and their Imam. Imam Jawad took the leadership of this organization effectively during his imamate. The Imam had selected representatives in various cities including Kufa, Baghdad, Basra, Wasit, which was a city in the region between Kufa and Basra, Qum, Ahwaz, Ray, Hamadan, and Bost, which was a city in Sistan. The historical records also indicate the expansion of Shi'ism to Egypt at this time. The name of 13 of the Imam's representatives is recorded in history. Many of the communications between the Imam and his representatives was in the form of letters. The Imam would respond to their questions and provided them with advice in letters. Tens of the Imam's letters are recorded in history. The Imam's leadership led to the expansion of the Shia community to an extent that they could even reach the top governmental positions. For instance, the governors of Bahrain and Bost were from the Shia followers of the Imam. Reaching to these positions was an opportunity for them to benefit the Shia community in hidden and save their wealth and lives from the persecution of the Abbasid government. Although the Imam had married Ma'mun's daughter, his affiliation to the government did not legitimize the Abbasid Caliphate in the eyes of the Muslims, particularly the Shias. During the imamate of Imam Jawad, the people of Qum, which was the main center of the Shias in Iran, rose up against Ma'mun's government 2 or 3 times. Their uprisals were suppressed by the government on every attempt. As a result, many were killed and the city endured serious damage. Ma'mun was at war with the Romans in current-day Turkey when he suddenly became sick and died. His body was moved back towards the Islamic territory to protect it from possible disrespect or revenge by the Romans. He was then buried in Tarsus in current-day Turkey. Prior to his death, Ma'mun had selected his brother Mu'tasim as his successor after himself instead of his sons. Mu'tasim was a warrior and an army leader. However, he lacked literacy and could not even write a letter. Ma'mun had found his brother Mu'tasim as the best candidate to manage the ever-increasing unrest within the Abbasid government. Although Ma'mun's troops favored his son Abbas for the caliphate, Abbas decided to respect his father's decision and thus paid allegiance to his uncle Mu'tasim. Ma'mun's army then followed Abbas and paid allegiance to Mu'tasim as the caliph. Once Mu'tasim assumed power, he was worried about the chaos and the unrests which threatened his new government. Among them was the long-standing threat of the Alawid uprisals. He was also concerned about the popularity and the social status of Imam Jawad, as he was the divine leader of the growing Shia community who did not accept the legitimacy of the Abbasid government. He decided to closely monitor and control every aspect of the Imam's life and isolate him from his followers. Thus, he ordered his governor in Medina to send the Imam to Baghdad. As a result, the Imam left Medina with his wife Umme Fadl towards Baghdad. The Imam, knowing that he would not return to Medina again unlike his prior two trips to Baghdad, introduced his oldest son Imam Hadi as the next Imam after himself to his companions. Mu'tasim portrayed to be respectful to the Imam in his stay in Baghdad. However, he was carefully monitoring the Imam's life. After around 10 months from the Imam's arrival in Baghdad, an incident triggered Mu'tasim to expedite his plot against the Imam, and he martyred him. A thief was brought to Mu'tasim's presence, who confessed to his theft. Mu'tasim decided to perform the Islamic law and cut one of his hands. However, he didn't know how much of the hand he should give the order to cut, as a long time had passed since this law had been executed on thieves. He then prepared an official meeting and invited the Islamic scholars, including Imam Jawad, to his presence and asked for their opinions. In this meeting, Ahmad ibn Abi Du'ad, who was the chief justice of Baghdad, determined the cutting limit to be at the wrist by referring to the Quranic verse that describes performing tayammum, or sand ablution, on hands. This opinion was supported by some of the scholars. However, some other scholars determined the cutting limit to be at the elbow by referring to the Quranic verse about performing ablution where the hands are washed at the elbows. Mu'tasim then turned to the Imam and asked for his opinion. The Imam, who was fully aware of the threats and conspiracies against himself, refused and told Mu'tasim that the other opinions were enough for him. However, Mu'tasim swore that he will not let the Imam go unless he got his opinion. When the Imam was forced to express his opinion, he told Mu'tasim that all of the provided answers were wrong. The Imam then determined the cutting limit to be at the fingers and emphasized that the palm of the hand should not be cut. Mu'tasim asked for the reasoning on this ruling. The Imam responded that the Prophet had determined 7 body parts, including the 2 palms, which must be placed on the earth during prostration to God. The Imam then said that these 7 body parts belong to God, and if the thief's hand was cut from the wrist or the elbow, he would not be able to properly prostrate to God. To strengthen his point, the Imam provided the Quranic evidence for his claim, similar to the other scholars. He referred to the following verse of the Quran.
وَأَنَّ الْمَسَاجِدَ لِلَّهِ فَلَا تَدْعُوا مَعَ اللَّهِ أَحَدًا
And the places of prostration are for God, so do not invoke anyone along with God. The word masjid in Arabic, which is commonly translated to mosque in English, in its essence means the place of prostration. Mu'tasim liked the Imam's opinion and ordered to cut the thief's fingers according to the Imam's opinion. This meeting finished, and Ahmad ibn Abi Du'ad was ashamed of his defeat in front of the young Imam. He later said, "I wish I had died before I attended this meeting." After 3 days, Ahmad ibn Abi Du'ad came to Mu'tasim and advised him that his action of accepting the Imam's opinion over the other scholars was not a wise decision for his government. He told Mu'tasim that the Imam's followers see the Imam deserving of the caliphate and regarded Mu'tasim as the one who has occupied the Imam's position. He said that the news of this official meeting has already spread in the society and was a strong evidence for the Imam's followers in their belief in him. This conversation triggered Mu'tasim to expedite in his plot to murder the Imam. Shortly after this incident, the Imam was poisoned and murdered. To implement his plot, Mu'tasim ordered one of his trusted ministers to invite the Imam to his house and offer him a poisonous meal. The Imam initially rejected this invitation. However, the minister insisted and said that he wanted the Imam to bless his house with his presence. He also told the Imam that another minister wanted to meet the Imam during this event. Due to the excessive insistence, the Imam accepted his invitation. After eating a small portion of the meal, the Imam found himself poisoned and suddenly left the minister's house. When the minister insisted for the Imam to stay longer, the Imam responded, "It would be better for you if I leave your house immediately." Due to the hidden nature of the plot for the Imam's martyrdom, his wife Ummi Fadl was also regarded as a suspect. She had a good motive as she didn't have any children from Imam Jawad and was jealous of his other wife who was the mother of his children. She was also from the Abbasid royal family and could have been tempted by her uncle Mu'tasim. Imam Jawad was murdered in less than a day from his poisoning, which demonstrates how lethal the poison was. The Imam was murdered on Mu'tasim's orders after around 10 months from his arrival in Baghdad on the last day of Dhul-Qi'dah in the year 220 Hijri. At the young age of just 25 years, he was the youngest Shia Imam to have been martyred. Historical records suggest that Imam Hadi miraculously traveled from Medina to Baghdad to take care of his father's rituals. He then returned to Medina in hidden. A large burial was held for the Imam as the Imam was affiliated to the Abbasid royal family and Mu'tasim wanted to portray for the people, particularly the Shias, that he was innocent in the Imam's death. A huge crowd of the Muslims attended the Imam's burial. Mu'tasim's son, Wathiq, officially led the prayer on the Imam's body. The crowd then carried the Imam's corpse towards one of the city's graveyards that belonged to the tribe of Quraysh and respectfully buried the Imam next to the tomb of his grandfather, Imam Qadhim alayhi salam. The imamate of Imam Jawad began with the martyrdom of his father, Imam Radha, when he was just 7.5 years old. He was the only child of Imam Radha and the only heir to inherit the imamate in the eyes of the Shias. However, the Shias did not fully accept his imamate until they validated his knowledge by asking him many questions. The imamate of Imam Jawad continued for about 17 years until his martyrdom. The majority of his imamate for about 15 years coincided with the government of Ma'mun. Ma'mun had portrayed having a good relationship with the Alawites. He had selected Imam Radha as his crown prince and later wed his daughter Umm Habib to him. Ma'mun knew that Imam Radha had a beloved son and decided to also promise his other daughter Umm Fadl to Imam Jawad without even the Imam's presence in Marv while he was just a child. About 2 years later, he invited Imam Jawad to Baghdad and witnessed the Imam's divine character and knowledge. He then Islamically married his daughter to the Imam while the Imam was just 8 or 9 years old. Imam Jawad returned to Medina alone and after about 11 years came back to Iraq for his official wedding ceremony to Umm Fadl. After a stay in Baghdad for several months, the Imam then returned to Medina with Umm Fadl and stayed there for the rest of Ma'mun's government. The imamate of Imam Jawad continued for about 2 years into the government of Mu'tasim. Mu'tasim, being worried about the social status of the Imam, brought him to Baghdad. After a short period of about 10 months, he martyred the Imam. The most unique aspect of the imamate of Imam Jawad was his imamate at a very young age. After 2 centuries from the Prophet's demise and the imamate of 8 holy imams among the Shia community, it was now time for the Shias to fully realize the elevated status of their imams. The acceptance of the imamate of a 7.5-year-old boy who was far younger than the Islamic puberty age of 15, was a practical lesson for the Shias to recognize that the imamate is a position determined by God. Once the Shias verified the imamate of Imam Jawad, they became proud of his imamate, and regarded his young age as a proof of their theology and the verification to the divine teachings they had received from the previous imams. Thus, they did not later object to the imamate of Imam Hadi and Imam Mahdi, who also became imams at a very young age. Imam Jawad was the first Shia Imam to become an Imam in his childhood. He was also the youngest Shia Imam at the time of martyrdom and was martyred at the age of just 25 years. He is known as Jawad, which means generous. He is also known as Babul Murad, or the Gate of Wishes. Many Muslims visit his holy shrine in Baghdad and ask God to bless them for the sake of the Imam with ease and sustenance and relief in their financial hardships. Also, the youth who visit his holy shrine feel a special connection with their young imam.